15th, 2019 morning session of the Portland City Council. Good morning, Carla.
Good morning.
Please call the roll.
Fish. Hardesty.
Here.
Udalee.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. Now we'll hear from legal counsel.
Good morning. Welcome to the Portland City Council. The City Council represents all Portlanders and meets to do the city's business. Presiding officer preserves order and decorum during City Council meetings so everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. If it does not, you may be ruled out of order. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When you have 30 seconds left, a yellow light goes on. When your time is done, a red light goes on. If you're in the audience and would like to show your support for something that is said, please feel free to do a thumbs up. If you want to express that you do not support something, please feel free to do a thumbs down. Please remain seated in council chambers unless entering or exiting. If you are filming the proceedings, please do not use bright lights or disrupt the meeting. Disruptive conduct, such as shouting or interrupting testimony or council deliberations, will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being ejected for the remainder of the meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave the meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Thank you for helping your fellow Portlanders feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe.
Very good, thanks. First up is communications, Carla.
Item 414, request of Stan Herman to address council regarding answering his question.
I do not see Mr. Herman here, but just so people know, my office has reached out to him per what I said I would do last month, and we are taking care of that issue. So that may explain why he's not here today. Next individual, please.
Item 415, request of Wayne Wignes to address council regarding confirmational bias in federal research on homelessness.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Wayne Wignes. Beginning in the 1990s, the field of research on homelessness underwent a paradigm shift. We went from seeing the issue from a social and even cultural phenomenon to one that today is considered to be a clinical issue. Clinical means the results of treatment are tied to the place of treatment. While I don't disagree with this, it's a big leap to go from that to the catchphrases that we find in policy discussions today, such as homelessness is a housing issue, or we know what works, housing first. Were these phrases intended to withstand scrutiny, housing would never have replaced clinical in the first phrase, and the second phrase would read more like, we know what works for some, while leaving the rest out in the cold. But these phrases are, in fact, more like ploys on group psychology, for which researchers have known for centuries that crowds can only hold simple concepts. And while they may be attenuated to, say, somewhat contradicting their own ideas, they care little for factual correctness. The scientific method these research reports are attempting to emulate relies on two parts: one, creative connections, and two, rigorous scrutiny of these connections. Without that second part, it's more like creative writing, not research. Real research is inherently open-ended in the sense that the goal develops simultaneously with our understanding. Both the goal and the method do. Understanding is a real goal of research, but the federal government has targets, not questions, and now they've taken to bullying agencies into compliance with their targets. Whereas a focus used to be on alleviating the suffering of everyone who is homeless, now agencies are pressured into literally scoring people on how helpless they are and then throwing all of our resources at a minority few, some of whom are not even homeless for the first time. The problem with prevention strategies and with entertaining pipe dreams of solving homelessness by weaning people on private housing is twofold. One, we cannot afford to give everybody their own private unit. The literature is clear on this. The strategies we've adopted, they're not even intended to work for everybody. And two, we cannot predict who is going to become homeless. The literature is clear on this as well. Neither of these things will improve so long as we persist with the false notion that homelessness is a housing issue. This is a notion that which has caused us to overlook potentially relevant social and cultural factors of causation. Homelessness is a clinical issue, not a private housing issue. We were never justified in jumping straight to saying that we should try to give everyone their very own private unit, so at least when it comes at the expense of the majority. I've posted a detailed review of what has been a guiding federal, supposedly research-based policy directive on each of you council members' Facebook. Decriminalizing life without property is a more pressing issue and the more realistic goal. Thank you.
Thank you. Next individual, please, Carla.
Item 416, request of Robert Patterson to address council regarding homelessness.
Good morning.
Morning. I want to thank the council for having me here again. My name is Robert Patterson. I'm homeless. I'm a homeless activist, and I'm the executive director of Emerald Alley. I recently signed up to volunteer for Senator Elizabeth Warren's campaign for my party's nomination, largely on the basis of her $100 billion plan to combat opioid addiction. I can't think of any plan from any party leader that will literally save the lives of tens of thousands of homeless. Yes, it is revolutionary, but I've spent too many nights laying beside a friend, wondering if they would ever wake up to accept anything less than revolutionary with regards to heroin and the homeless. You see, we homeless are generally a patient and peaceful lot. I dare say we've been lulled into a meek resignation by the indifference of political leaders. But I'm new to being homeless and have untapped reserves of both piss and vinegar, especially when it comes to the safety of homeless people. Mayor Wheeler, I'm pleased to hear about your proposed mobile showers, but I believe that without sufficient attention to the risks that they pose, an overdosed corpse will be found in one. Showers are needed, and more of them to be sure, but what is revolutionary are safe injection facilities, which I hope this council will explore bringing to the Portland street. Such facilities would create a space for users to inject under the watchful eyes of a nurse, to test the purity of their drug, and to access clean needles and a safe place to dispose them. Safe injection facilities would save lives, decrease the spread of infectious disease, promote moderation, and act as a portal to services of recovery, employment, housing, and mental health. Furthermore, we know that naloxone saves lives, as does the outstanding training in naloxone administration that Outside In provides. What is lacking, however, is having naloxone nearby when it matters the most, in the minutes following an overdose. Therefore, I hope the council will work with regional leaders to equip every TriMet bus with the life-saving medication and to train every driver in its administration. It's an easy precaution to take, and it will save lives. Commissioner Hardesty, I heard you speak once of angels shepherding you through difficulties. Well, through your commitment to Portland Street Response, you're an angel to thousands of Portlanders in crisis. Thank you. $500,000 isn't nearly enough for the good work Street Response will perform, but we'll get there. Most of you know me with regards to Everyone Counts and the work that I've done to ensure that the homeless are counted accurately and fairly in next year's census. That work continues, and I'll leave you with this reminder. Many of us homeless turn away from the census for the same reasons that we turn away from government and from society itself. There is a gnawing sense of loneliness that comes when one is ostracized, an aching otherness that leaves one lacking trust and with only spit and spite for one's tormentors. The traumas of the past bear a thick scar indeed, but what is needed now is not just the tokenism of being counted for a decennial census, but rather a constant mission of understanding us, of honoring us, of asking our forgiveness at your indifference, and of inviting our attendance to the national family and the American dream. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson. Mayor, may I?
Yeah, please,
Mr. Patterson, Hurston. Thank you so much for being here. I want to say that the mayor deserves credit as well for the Portland Street Response, since he did put $500,000 into the budget to make that happen. And we are working cooperatively, our two offices, to actually make sure that we can roll this out in a way that is very humane and serves the purpose that we want, which is to make sure that nobody dies because they're asking for help. I had a question for you about whether or not you've spoken with Multnomah County Commission about the safe injection sites. As you know, that's where the county health clinics are.
Mm-hmm. I haven't, no, but it's a It's a message that, that I'm eager to take to them.
Yes, I think that they would be very open. I know that the commissioners have been looking at how to make that possible. I think you'll find a very welcoming audience if you go and talk to the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Next individual, please.
Item 417, request of Brad Perkins to address council regarding Sullivan's, Rose Quarter to Gorge Trail, Rose Quarter, Trailblazers, Cascadia High Speed Rail.
That's the list. Wow.
In 2 minutes.
I'll try to get it all. After last night's meeting, I don't know. Golden State. Okay. Thanks all for hearing me today. Portland wants to be a winner. Portlanders want to be a part of the progressive city that blazes a trail to fight climate change. People move here from all other parts of the United States for the great outdoors, weather, historic downtown, bikes, transit, pedestrian orientation, and environmental goals. The Trailblazers, Timbers, Thorns, Diamond Baseball, and citizens of Portland are ready to make an impact and help us become a first-tier city, but we lack the proper planning process to do so. Citizens have the desire to discuss big ideas and plan in small groups if given the chance by leaders. Just 5 months ago, the city adopted the massive comprehensive plan. It sets a general plan for growth, but will need constant refinement. When there is a need to refine a part of the plan, residents and business people need to be involved as a task force, project team, or community involvement committees to address and direct major transportation development projects. Hearings and open houses for a new bridge, greenways, freeway widening, and Rose Quarter project is not community involvement. And examples are many. The proposed Sullivan's Gulch Bridge over I-84 had only 2 open houses. A community involvement committee was never formed. So a viable connection to a future Sullivan's Gulch Trail was never planned. Without a CIC, it took a lot of pressure from the Seoul District Business Association to get PBOT to listen to Black community before PBOT made the right decision to make Northeast 11th Avenue the least destructive community greenway. The Green Loop is marching along by city development department heads without neighborhood and business association support. Nor does it have a CIC. ODOT's I-5RQ lane widening project has an environmental assessment that only fools would accept. It needs an environmental impact statement study and CIC to review the results. I appreciate that Commissioners Udaly and Hardesty are in support of this smarter planning approach to this $500 million disaster in the hood. Lastly, and most importantly, we need to expand the Albina Vision Group with the Rose Quarter area stakeholders who will study the district between MLK Boulevard and the Willamette River and I-84 to Russell Avenue. This expanded group and the city need not be shy about including its plans, a new Rose Quarter transportation hub and a Cascadia high-speed rail station with Willamette Greenway and Rose Quarter to Gorge Trail corridors. Teamwork makes for a winning Trailblazer team, just as Portland can be a winning city in its inclusive planning efforts only if the city passes the ball to its citizens to play as equals on the team. And I just wanted to draw in how much is being done over at the post office on the other side of the river. What we're asking is fair planning effort on our side, the east side. So I appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Thank you. I just wanted to also let you know, Mr. Perkins, that the proposed budget has $75,000 in it for the Albina Vision to help further that public process. Just so you know.
If we could expand the group, that's the main goal that I have the area to.
Very good.
Thank you, sir. For that.
You bet. One last person, Carla?
Yes. Item 418, request of Nancy Lopez to address council regarding police.
Good morning.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor Ted Wheeler and council members for your time today and hearing my concerns. Today I'm here to talk about my son's future, Ivan, a soon-to-be graduating senior from Lincoln High School, who's here in the back with me. Ivan is a smart kid, a learner in his circle of friends, and sweetheart amongst any adult that knows him. He's part of various cultural clubs such as Brothers of Color and Mecha at Lincoln High School. He will be taking a gap year in August and travel the world and visit impoverished countries to do volunteer work and will come back to enroll in a four-year university. I've educated my son on how to respond when it comes to contact with police because I personally have seen who fills our jails and prisons in the Tri-County area, state and federal levels, people of color. As a person of color, I've lived in predominantly white neighborhoods. I introduced my son to neighbors so they avoid calling the police if in case they ever saw him walking home at night from practice. He's not allowed to walk at night unless I'm aware that and it's relatively a short walk. At the early age of 12, I taught Ivan about rape culture because it was an age that girls were now a focus and I wanted him to understand his responsibility as a male. It's always been my mission to make sure my son grows up to being a man, to be a man with a great heart, integrity, humility, intention, and great purpose so that he could one day be a great citizen of any community he chooses to be a part of. Ivan is my greatest pride and joy, and he's my only child in Rock. I'm a single mother with an education in the criminal justice field and have worked for or with entities such as Washington County Juvenile Department, Multnomah County Juvenile, Portland Police Bureau, and various nonprofits. So you can understand why, in addition to having great parents, I've learned to be a loving, responsible, strong, and knowledgeable parent so that I can only equip my son for life, but to be a pillar of great strength in his personal life and the lives he comes in contact with. On April 2nd, 4:51, my son was pulled over while I was the passenger of the seat. He was pulled over allegedly for speeding. As soon as the officer approached the vehicle, he said, why were you going so damn fast? The voice was very condescending and disgusted at my best description. He asked for my son's driver's license while Ivan reached to the backseat for his black school backpack and pulled out his wallet and proceeded to get his license to give to the officer in the moment. I didn't think about this interaction, and in its process, I'll explain to the police this piece in the latter. The officer then came back with a ticket in hand. In this moment, I decided to educate the police officer about the Communities of Color report, as most of the jobs in Multnomah and Washington County I've done have focused on. I explained the fear of Ivan, who was very scared and anxious and stressed about the situation. I'm gonna skip a little bit. The officer chose to instead tell me that I had no knowledge of his personal experience and that I had no idea about the reverse racism he experienced as a white male in the quote-unquote South Side. This further frustrated me. I'm gonna run out of time. I just wanted to let you guys know about that, and I am just asking for support in regards to my son.
Thank you.
Excuse me, Mayor. I'd love to hear the rest of her statement, if that's okay with the council.
Without objection.
Okay. In this moment, I decided to educate the officers about what Communities of Color report, as most of my jobs in both Washington and Multnomah have focused on. How we can best serve our communities of color. I explained the fears of Ivan, who was very scared and anxious and stressed about the situation. I took a moment to address his approach and how it's in these moments that a situation can turn highly brutal, especially with the person of color and the overwhelming bad statistics Portland Police Bureau has against its communities of color. The officer instead chose to tell me that I had no knowledge of his personal experience and that I had no idea the reverse racism he experienced as a white male in the quote-unquote South Side. This further frustrated me as a white police officer with much privilege than my whole family together could ever have or my entire community as a whole could ever have to use quote-unquote reverse racism as a way to understand how my son could possibly feel in this situation. Later, I realized that after Ivan was anxiety-ridden for a week, he could not drive. We had to talk to school officials about the situation. We decided to be proactive and figure out ways to support our quote-unquote adult school children. Our students need to know how to live their lives around Portland Police Bureau, and they need to learn how to have better interactions with our children of color, that is the Portland Police Bureau. I am an Oregon taxpayer and a resident of Portland, and I am appalled that my taxpayer money has yet to see Portland Police Bureau be fully trained on diversity, equity, and inclusion. The city's plan and initiatives of equity are failing our communities of color. This could have been a learning opportunity for both of these men, especially for my son. Instead, it became a moment of distress, sadness, disappointment, prejudice, misunderstanding, and an oppressive matter. I later pulled the report, and the officer used my statements to benefit his report. Quote, pulled his wallet from his backpack and backseat with no issues, is a subjective statement. He had no knowledge what my son suffers from, that my son suffers from anxiety, and he was highly stressed. Our communities are currently under attack, locally and nationally, under the current administration. What I hope for is that Portland Police Bureau continues to improve training, cultural competency, interpersonal communication, and changing the ways the city responds to these types of police contacts. That can either be a moment of learning and opposed to the common theme of stories that make newspaper headlines and stories for the TV. I will commit to working with Portland schools and PPS on how we can best support adult youth that are still in high school to avoid their future trajectory to a grave instead of the bright future the students, regardless of color, deserve. I have contacted an attorney so that my son could understand the situation and his rights, and he is scheduled for a ride-along meeting with a police lieutenant and a police officer, a to-do list that most, if not all, most white families don't feel the need to do. It's time and money, but for me and him, I'll do anything. I also plead that if he can please have this ticket dismissed before we go to trial, because he has chosen to go to trial. My son deserves an opportunity to learn to avoid further issues in the criminal justice and yet become another statistic. I ask that you please protect my son, Ivan Sanchez, and not apologize in the future for laying him 6 feet under, because you have failed to continuously hold Portland Police Bureau for all their shortcomings as it pertains to our communities of color. We're under attack and we need your protection. Thank you very much for your time.
Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to say I'm so sorry that happened to your son. And I want to ask, do you have the officer's name? Please don't tell me, just yes or no. And
yes.
If you have the name,
yes.
I would love for you to come to my office and leave that information. So okay. You do know the officer's name?
Yes.
Excellent. Is your son here?
He is.
Please have him stand up. Thank you for being here. And I apologize for what happened to you. All young people should feel safe in our community. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
So I appreciate the last part of your statement, because my suggestion was going to be, since you definitely feel aggrieved based on the facts that you've presented, it would be appropriate, and I know the chief would have a particular interest in this issue. We have, in fact, gone through extensive retooling of the training that's required for our police officers. That includes implicit bias training, de-escalation training, restorative justice training. So they are most certainly making that effort. And I'm hearing from your perspective that you feel that that has not succeeded, that that has failed. And so my recommendation was going to be, how could we facilitate communication between you, or better yet, your son, and the officer to better understand what happened? Because it sounds like there may have been some misunderstanding both ways here, and I'd like to see that resolved. And it sounds like you've already taken that affirmative step to do that, and I'm very appreciative of that.
Thank you
for coming.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mayor, I just want to say that there's a power imbalance when a 17-year-old child is stopped by a police officer. So I just can't imagine there being a wrong on both sides. I think it's really important that we acknowledge that there's a total power imbalance, and that no young person should be so fearful that they're going to lose their life when they get stopped.
Commissioner Hardesty, I'm not going to sit here and dispute the testimony that we've had, because I don't know what happened. I was not there, so I take her at her word that what she's provided is accurate. And so my recommendation was going to be that we work to facilitate a meeting so that we can ascertain whether there is a misunderstanding. You don't have to agree with me. That's all right.
I would just ask that if there's any way that anybody could give me the names of who I could contact for that, because in regards to my testimony, I work in the Washington County area, so I contacted individuals that I feel comfortable to have a sit down with my son. I did not contact anybody at Portland Police Bureau because I did not feel comfortable.
You do not have to. We have the Independent Police Review Commission through the Auditor's Office and the Ombudsman Program, which is located on the third floor of this building, and they are independent from the police bureau. If you feel more comfortable going in that direction, that's certainly an option that's available to you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I will give you my card so that you can contact my office and we'll help you walk through that process.
Thank you so much.
Ms. Lopez, thank you for taking the time to come in today. Thank you, Ms. Lopez, for coming in too. And Thank you for being a really good mom and for helping us all understand this. There are many things that each of us can do to help fix this situation, and the council is very much wanting to fix it. So thank you for telling us what happened and the steps that you're taking as a parent. I just really appreciate your work in the community and with your son.
Thank you very much. I appreciate
you
guys'
time. Thank you for being here. Appreciate it. And that completes our communications. Have any items been pulled off the consent agenda, Carla?
Yes, we have two items, item 424 and 425.
Very good. Could we please call the roll on the remainder of the consent agenda?
Fish?
Aye.
Hardesty? Fritz?
Aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. And I'd like to make a note of one item that we have supported on this consent agenda because it's come up a couple of times this week. For the past two, with regard to item 422, this is a grant agreement for the Center for Intercultural Organizing for $40,500. For the past 2 years, the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability has resourced Unite Oregon and other community-based organizations in the Southwest Corridor to engage low-income renters, transit riders, immigrants and refugees, and people of color in the planning process for the light rail project and affordable housing strategy. Their engagement activities were critical to ensuring that the community's priorities for anti-displacement policies and investments and the results of these activities were included in the Southwest Corridor Equitable Housing Strategy, which was adopted both by this City Council and the Tigard City Council last year. Now the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, the Portland Housing Bureau, and Prosper Portland are in the early stages of implementing that anti-displacement strategy. They're committed to continuing to build relationships with those communities most impacted by light rail and the ongoing station planning that's taking place in that area. Preventing displacement of vulnerable populations starts with an early commitment to engaging those groups in the early decision-making process. So this grant will allow Unite Oregon to develop a deeper relationship with the community through the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability's West Portland Town Center planning process. It's also going to help Unite bring historically marginalized communities into the center of the planning process and identify their priorities for building out a healthy, connected town center without displacement. Commissioner Fritz.
I'm glad you raised this one. I was just wondering, why are we using the old name in the ordinance rather than the new? And if you don't know, you can get back to me later.
I honestly don't know the answer to that question.
I just thought that was interesting.
That caught my attention as well. Very good. We will move on then to the first time certain item. Item number 419, please, Carla.
Accept the quarterly technology oversight committee report from the chief administrative officer.
Colleagues, the Technology Oversight Committee provides citizen oversight on significant city technology projects, especially those that are deemed to have high risk or high cost, for the purpose of increased accountability and transparency. The independent five-member committee reports on a quarterly basis on projects under its oversight to the chief administrative officer, who then forwards these reports to us here, the council. The quarterly reports include information from each project's external quality assurance consultant and the Technology Oversight Committee's assessment of the project status. I'm now going to turn this over to Heather Hather. She is the Senior Management Analyst from the Office of Management and Finance for a presentation on the report that's before us today. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. It's our pleasure to be here today. As Mayor Wheeler mentioned, I'm Heather Hafer. I'm joined today by two people, one familiar face, Jeff Baer, the Director of the Bureau of Technology Services, and a new guest to my left is Jimmy Goddard, one of our newer TOC members who was appointed by Commissioner Udaly. And Commissioner Udaly, I want to thank you because Jimmy has been a fantastic addition to our team, and I'm thrilled to be sitting next to him here today. TOC members that are not present here today are Diana Garcia for Commissioner Fritz, Victoria Trapp, who represents Commissioner Hardesty, Wilf Pinfold, appointed by Mayor Wheeler, and Leland Nell is our newest member of the TOC, appointed by Commissioner Fish. As Mayor Wheeler also mentioned, TOC advises Chief Administrative Officer Tom Reinhart, and we're here to present that information that we've given to him for the time of January through March 2019. During this time, the TOC monitored one project, and that's the Portland Online Permitting System, or POPS, which you're all familiar with. TOC is also overseeing the Portland, Oregon website replacement project and the integrated tax system project, but did not rate these projects for this quarter. TOC is also now actively monitoring the Open and Accountable Elections Program, but did not rate it for the first time until April. So we'll be reporting on that at our next update. So with that, I am absolutely delighted to turn this over to my new friend, Jimmy. And Jimmy.
Thank you, Heather. Good morning, Mayor Wheeler. My name is Jimmy Godard, and I was appointed by Commissioner Udeli to represent our office at the Technology Oversight Committee, along with my colleagues on the TOC meet monthly to review these technology projects. And we are pleased and delighted to see the progress being made on the Portland permitting online, Portland Online Permitting System, also known as POPS. We would like to acknowledge the work the team is putting into this and understand this is a major lift, but we are confident in the ability to deliver this project. As a matter of fact, yesterday I talked to a business owner on 82nd who did not know I was part of the TOC, and she shared with me some great comments about the Inspector app as she had an inspector visiting her location. So we also have great feedbacks from the on the street of about this effort. We are also looking forward to overseeing the integrated tax system project, which is another complex technology project. And I will yield to Jeff for additional thoughts.
All right, thank you, Jimmy. And thank you, Mayor Wheeler, members of City Council. I want to provide a few more focused comments related to the Portland Online Permitting System. As you can see, it continues to trend in the show in the report that's trending in the solid yellow, yellow, green, or yellow, green, green categories. So we've got a lot more green than we've ever had before. We've had a substantial amount of work to complete, and but all indicators these different categories are showing very positive progress. Two of the six work streams have been launched since we've had the program moving forward. That includes the Development Hub, PDX, and also the electronic plans. And actually, BDS is receiving very positive reviews by the development community for these two features, and they're getting requests to expand the functionality, which we will continue to work on moving forward. Also, the POPS team has been hosting a number of different town halls and open houses to provide project updates and very focused questions about the system and the different features and what's to be expected once we go live. Overall, the POPS team is making very good progress towards our go-live date later this year in November. Also, the TOC members also received an overview of the integrated tax system for, or ITS as it's known, which will be another project that will be coming up underneath the TOC purview very shortly. And our next quarterly report will also include the QA assessment on the Open Accountable Elections project. We recently brought on Kaysen Associates as the QA consultant. You might be a name familiar with that council. Mr. Clifford Smith has been working directly with Director Mote and the project team, and he will be providing the his QA assessment this coming Monday at our TOC meeting. So with that, I'm glad to pause and answer any questions on any of the projects that we have under the review.
Commissioner Hursty? Oh, sorry. It looks good.
All right.
We're happy to see yellow and green, and we're happy not to see red.
So are we.
Thank you. We appreciate this report, and we'll see you next quarter. Thank you.
Move to accept the report.
I will accept the motion.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Fritz, a second from Commissioner Hardesty. Any further discussion, please call the roll. We've lost Carla.
We could just call it ourselves.
She's finally had enough of us. Here she is. We're just calling the roll on the report for 419, please, Carla.
Fish.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Udaly.
Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you to the TOC members, not only for all your work, but for being here today. Aye.
Wheeler.
So this wasn't necessarily the most exciting report today, and I'm grateful for that, Heather, and to your entire team. The work you do is critically important, and we appreciate the fact that you are there taking a good hard look at the work that we're doing so that, frankly, we don't have to, because we don't have the bandwidth to dive into the details the way you do. And so I'm very, very grateful for your service, and I'm grateful for the work you do to make sure that things are staying on track. I vote aye. Report's accepted. We'll see you next quarter. Thank you. Next item, Carla. We can't quite go to 10-1 to 420. Let's please go to a second reading item, 433.
Authorize an agreement with Multnomah County to address youth and gang violence in an amount not to exceed $109,835.
So this is a second reading of a non-emergency ordinance. We've already had a presentation and taken testimony. Please call the roll.
Fish?
Aye.
Hardesty?
No.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Wheeler?
This is a position in collaboration involving the Office of Youth Violence Prevention, the Police Bureau in Multnomah County. This is a collaboration that results from the Local Public Safety Coordinating Commission's local public safety recommendation. Support of this organization is support for the Portland Police Bureau and Multnomah County splitting the costs of the position in the Office of Youth Violence Prevention. The purpose of the position is to implement, monitor, and provide ongoing evaluation of all aspects of the plan under the guidance of the LPSC Youth and Gang Subcommittee Steering Committee. The coordinator position will offer sustained enhancements and coordination of multidisciplinary and data-driven strategies across the spectrum of prevention and reentry programming, resulting in the achievement of better outcomes for youth, their families, and their community. And the key here is data collection and transparency. I support this position, in addition, because it leverages strong partnerships, emphasizing prevention and intervention rather than after-the-fact incarceration. The work done provides resources and coordination to address destructive behavior patterns before they become more problematic. This is an excellent example of working together and finding solutions that result in stronger and safer communities. I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted. Let's go to another second reading. Item number 434, please.
Extend contract with Cascadia Behavioral Healthcare, Inc. to June 30, 2022 and increase the not-to-exceed amount to $3,223,577 for mental health clinician services.
Colleagues, this is also a second reading. There's been a prior presentation and public testimony on this item. Any further discussion? Carla, please call the roll.
Fish?
Mayor, my understanding is that the next time this goes out to bid, there'll be an RFP in 2022. With that understanding, I vote aye.
Hardesty?
My understanding
You're
is
off.
That this is
My understanding is that this is the fifth time that this contract has been amended, and I am concerned about any contract that we just continue to add money to without actually doing any evaluation of its effectiveness. And because of that, I will vote no.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
So I had those questions last week, and in response, I received this binder. Which is an absolute, it's a page turner. I was fascinated by it. I want to thank Lieutenant Casey Hetman from the Behavioral Health Response Team, Frank Silver, the Behavioral Health Unit Analyst, and Barbara Snow, the Cascadia Behavioral Healthcare Program Manager. It sounds like that the rest of the council didn't get this binder. It is phenomenal work. So I encourage you, Mayor, to have everybody get one of these and then colleagues for you each to read it, because it actually shows that the program has been extremely successful. I thank also Dr. Elizabeth Gerritsen, who is, hang on, I should look into my binder, the Training Division Senior Program Manager. I worked with her in my first term when I was in charge of emergency communications, and Dr. Maggie Bennington-Davis, who was then in charge of Cascadia, and I and multiple other all the other jurisdictions who were concerned about public safety with relation to people experiencing mental health illnesses in particular, worked together and piloted the first mobile response units. So it's really, really impressive to see that 10 years later, oh, not quite 10 years, this program has been really successful. And so last week I was tentatively prepared to support it because of the mayor's knowledge and insistence that it's part of the solution for looking at street response, et cetera. I'm now very enthusiastically supporting it. Aye.
Wheeler.
Well, rarely is a book written that has such an impact in such a short period of time. May I borrow your binder briefly, and then what I will do is make sure that we have copies for the full
council. You have to give it back.
I promise.
It's actually...
I'm making a promise right here on camera, live.
Sorry, and you're voting. Sorry, I should be interrupting.
I'm just speechless. I vote aye. Great program. Glad that we're continuing this partnership. I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted. Thank you.
The interesting part, Mayor, of this binder is that there's a report from March of 18. There's multiple reports that have been written along the way. They just haven't been passed along to the council. So I know that sometimes we get so many reports and we don't get now testimony on reports either, that bureaus might feel reluctant to be giving council the information. At the very least, it would be helpful to get it to us outside of a council session. But I think it's important for the public to know what we're doing with taxpayers' money and what the outcomes are.
Very good. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. I certainly agree, Commissioner Fritz, that it would have been helpful for all the council to have had this information so that we could have studied it and weighed whether or not to support it. I think that sends a strong message that some people get information and some don't, and I'm troubled by that.
Well, I asked for it in particular last week, and nobody said I'd like that too.
I didn't know that I had to ask for information about something that I would be voting on that was over $3 million, but I hear you.
All right. So I have stretched. Actually, there's one more thing I can do to stretch this out for two more minutes. item number 435. Could you read that, Carla? I'm going to pull it back to my office.
Yes, 435. Authorize a contract for utility bill printing, mailing, and presentment for a term of 5 years for $4.6 million.
Colleagues, I am returning this to my office for further work. So we will not be hearing item 435 today. And now we're going to take a 2-minute recess.